Aren't you interested in learning breakthrough wealth building strategies, such as how to flip a home in less than 2 weeks using other people's money with no real estate license, or how to build a low-cost home-based business? You can discover how to take passive income from any source and invest it into real estate, stocks, or business to become financially independent investing in any market with Residual Roads Business Institute. Collaborate with Andre and other Residual Roads advisors to create a free action plan and start implementing strategies today. Go to www.residualroads.com or email info@residualroads.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. You've been searching for different ways to become financially independent or generate passive income to live out your life's purpose as you've seen others do it, but need insight on how. Well, get excited because here you'll discover the tips and resources to fulfill that need. Andre Stewart has spent more than a decade successfully making it happen for himself and others. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to another episode of Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today we have a special guest. His name is Nick Hill. He's a prominent investor out of Canada. So he'd be interested to see what the market's like for real estate in Canada. He's also the host of a podcast, and I believe they have over 3 million listeners. So we'll let him explain more about what he has going on and how he got his podcast to grow so large. How you doing, Nick?
I'm great, man. I'm happy to be here. Excited to be having this conversation with another investor and podcast host. You and I have a lot in common.
For sure, man. And I love Canada, man. I'm not exactly sure what part you're in, but if you can tell us exactly what region you're in, I love Vancouver. So if you're there, I need to make a trip.
For sure. Well, look, funnily enough, I was born and raised in Vancouver. For your audience, which I'm guessing is mostly American, we've got about probably 10% of our audience in America as well. I was born and raised in Vancouver, which is a beautiful city right on the west coast, right on the ocean, on the coastline with mountains. And I was lucky enough to be born and raised there. Then I moved over to another city that hopefully most people know, Toronto, which is by far the largest city in Canada. Very close to the border. I mean, you can drive to New York within, 7 hours, which I have done. We kind of, and with the podcast now, it's really allowed me to get a really great understanding of real estate from a coast to coast perspective and the different markets and the different cities, similar to what you guys have down there, but obviously on a fraction of the size, literally about a tenth of the size.
That's interesting to find out, man. You did live in Vancouver. I love Granville Island, man. That's like one of my favorite places to go, man.
Yeah, it is. That's a special spot. I mean, look, Vancouver is a special spot overall. It's kind of nestled right against the ocean and tucked in behind the mountains. So there's not a lot of urban sprawl able to happen, right? And that's why I think a lot of the real estate there has gotten really expensive. But just the natural landscape, similar to a lot of the Pacific Northwest that you guys would know, it's just beautiful. Just a beautiful place.
It is, man. And it's interesting because like being there, it gets dark. Like 1 a.m. or something.
Well, the one thing I will say about Vancouver from a weather standpoint is it's a tropical rainforest, right? So it does rain quite a bit. Now I'm in Toronto, and this might shock some of your listeners, especially those in more southern areas of America, but it gets pretty damn cold up here in Canada, which definitely plays a part on our population, where we live, how we build, all that good stuff. Mm. Yeah, Vancouver rains quite a bit, so it is gray quite a lot during the winter months, especially. But you catch it on a good day in the summer, and it's paradise.
Exactly. I was there in July, and I think June a couple of times, and yeah, man, it's amazing at that point in time.
Yeah, we're actually heading out in about a month and a half to host an event out in Vancouver, take a bunch of meetings and interview Chip Wilson, who is a pretty famous Canadian billionaire, owns about $2 billion worth of real estate between Vancouver and Seattle. Mm-hmm. Also the creator and founder of Lululemon, a little well-known brand that kind of revolutionized pants. So that should be a fun interview. Sure.
I mean, I bet some women on the West Coast want to tune into that one. Everyone on the West Coast wears Lululemon, man. So.
Exactly. Everyone's doing yoga, eating granola, and wearing Lululemon, right?
That is the new trend. Well, tell us a little bit about how you got into real estate investing. And I definitely want to hear more about the Toronto market. I know during last year, prices in Toronto were insane. I think a guy was selling a garage for like $900,000, man. It was like, what?
Sounds about right. Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, why don't I start with a bit about myself, and then we can get into the juicy stuff with Toronto. So, you know, going back over a decade, I'm 33 now. In my early 20s, after graduating both college and university, separate system up here, I worked in an architecture and engineering firm, spent a lot of time in the construction space, but also at the same time was always starting my own businesses. I had the entrepreneur bug at a young age, and I didn't come from, like, my dad's a teacher, my mom's a social worker, very, very modest background. Parents didn't really know anything about business. So I took it upon myself to go out and find mentors and try to gain as much business knowledge and acumen as possible by osmosis, and just doing it the old school way by working hard and kind of grinding through it. So fast forward through a decade of, you know, businesses and different jobs, all within kind of the real estate space, right? Went and worked at a commercial real estate brokerage for a little while, Colliers. It was an offshoot of Colliers, which I know is a prominent company down in the States as well. And really the career path kind of drastically changed about 4 or 5 years ago. And then obviously with the onset of COVID, it really jump-started things in another direction for me. So I was always interested in real estate investing, like a lot of people. I think I had analysis paralysis, like a lot of people, was going to events, listening to Bigger Pockets, which truly I can say changed my life. There was nothing like that up here in Canada though. So I was really trying to seek out as much relevant information as I could, while still taking in a lot of the principles of real estate investing. The fundamentals of investing in real estate are the same no matter where you are in the world. Bought one duplex, you know, renovated it myself, got the tenants in there, went through some BS with tenants and experienced all that good stuff. And over the course of the next several months, I was able to buy another duplex. And this was with some startup capital that I'd gotten from selling a little business that I had. From there, things just kind of started to take off. I realized that I wanted to be a full-time real estate investor. I tried to figure out any way how, and you know, it becomes pretty obvious pretty quickly that it's not as easy as some of the internet gurus and people make it sound. So some grinding there, decided I wanted to get my mortgage license. So became a mortgage agent, which is the same thing as a loan officer for anyone wondering. And I wanted to do that because I wanted every aspect of my life to be involved, surrounding, and providing me a better and fuller understanding of real estate investing and anything under that umbrella. I'd already spent time in the transactional real estate side of things, the construction side of things. I wanted to figure out the financing piece. Kind of fast forward a little bit, was still buying properties, still doing all the normal investor stuff, driving around, looking for good markets, building power teams, talking to as many people as possible. Started a podcast about a year and a half ago, actually, I guess going on 2 years ago now, with the current co-host that I still do it with, who's a very prominent figure in Canadian real estate and is constantly talking to the media, has a very large Twitter following, actually hosts weekly Twitter spaces live that are attended by thousands. We did the podcast for a while. It kind of lived in relative obscurity for the vast majority of it, until about 9 months ago, we got approached by a larger network up here in Canada, actually the largest investing podcast called The Canadian Investor, that was looking to grow their network, do kind of an offshoot. And we like to joke in Canada that real estate is our national sport up here because everyone's so obsessed with it. So we jumped at the opportunity to, you know, roll with these guys and see what happens. And yeah, it's been an amazing journey, specifically over like the last 9 months since the launch of the podcast, which has now grown to the biggest real estate podcast, biggest real estate investing podcast, and one of the biggest business and investing podcasts in the country. And now we've started to do deals across the country. Our portfolios have grown from, you know, mine was at about 10 doors a year ago. Now I'm at over 30. And it's just allowed us to really speak with investors across the country, get those really important anecdotes, figure out, you know, what landlord tenant boards are doing across the country, what a buildable square foot is on the East Coast versus the West Coast. And it just provided a lot of great insight, and it provided us the opportunity to work with a lot of great people across the country.
So that's very interesting. That one thing that I caught my ears was the fact that you said real estate is a sport, basically, in Canada. Yeah. Why is that? Why is it such a big deal? Because I have some clients that are from Canada and they're trying to start investing in the US. What is it about in real estate that Canadians flock to?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I think a lot of it comes down to sentiment and kind of like the, you know, quote unquote, the American dream, the Canadian dream. It's the same dream, right? You know,
North America.
You grow up, you buy a house. That's it, right? Land of the free, home of the brave, get a job, get a house, get a dog, white picket fence, whatever you want to call it. And I think that's the dream that a lot of people have been sold, especially with like the generational gaps that we've seen, right? Like my parents all were able to buy houses at very reasonable prices. And I think it's almost been a reverse shift in like now that the desire is even more there to buy a house because we have such a housing crisis that it's fueled that a little bit more. Also, you know, from an investing standpoint, I think the financial literacy in Canada, and this probably isn't a Canadian-centric problem, but the financial literacy here is not where it needs to be. And I think it's probably the same in America. And I think a lot of people look to real estate as, oh, this is the simple, easy way to do it, right? I mean, buy a house. I've watched enough HGTV and Selling Sunset and all that good stuff that I can become a real estate agent or a loan officer or a flipper and boom, you know, start making some money immediately, which, you know, as we all know, is most likely not the case.
That's funny. Not to cut you off, but that's a mystical dream that I guess made its way to Canada. You know what I mean? Financial literacy is a good point that you made. So it's not something that's, you know, centralized in the U.S. It's obviously something that you just mentioned being a big thing in Canada. What are some of the things that you see that they're trying to do to change that in Canada?
Honestly, from a financial literacy standpoint, from like a government or any kind of large institutional level, nothing, not much anyways. and that's kind of, you know, that's why like I really respect what a guy like yourself is doing. And I think the mutual respect where we're just trying to put value add stuff back out there. Stuff that every episode we've done, we don't do traditional stuff, right? Like we have an episode buying real estate in a corporation versus your personal name, 12 ways to make money in real estate, breaking your mortgage fixed versus variable, buying a portfolio versus building a portfolio. Essentially, we've tried to start like a real estate investing school because a lot of, and we're not the only ones doing this, obviously. There's a lot of great people putting a lot of great content out there, but you have to go out and find that yourself. So I think there has to be a desire to be financial literate and to a desire to learn, you know, anything, whether it be investing in ETFs or mutual funds or investing in real estate.
It's funny that you say that because the narrative, obviously, in Canada is the same as in the U.S. People think that money is just supposed to come to them, or they just think that certain demographics have money and that it just flows to them, which is kind of true. Like there's obviously generational wealth that has been passed down, but in 2023, there's a lot of opportunity for anyone to go out there and get it if they go and look for it. You have so many apps like Robinhood. You have InvestFard, which is my app that allows people to invest in real estate remotely. So there's so many different tools that people have now. And then you have YouTube or different podcasts where you can educate yourself. So you just have to put the work in. And so I'm happy you brought that up because you're in Canada, even though it's still North America, but you still have the same issues that we have here in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I think it's just like a human issue, but I also think it's something that really will like divide the doers and the people that just never really get around to doing it, right? Like what separates a good investor or even just a successful person? That's just, you know, trying and failing and trying and failing and seeking out information, utilizing your resources. And we talk as real estate investors, we talk a lot about leverage, right? Whether it's the Burr method or a refinance. I know you guys have a beautiful thing called a 1031 exchange, which trust me, all Canadians are jealous of. It does not exist up here, unfortunately. But, you know, I think it's really just, we're in an age where there's so much valuable information out there. But people just need to figure out what it is. And people go out and they ingest all of it, and that's great. But it's what are you going to do with that information when you have it? Are you, what's actually putting it into play? And for me, I've always been a guy that actions speak a lot louder than words. You know, I'm lucky enough that I get to talk to investors from across the country on a daily basis almost at this point. And within the first few minutes, I'm pretty clear as to if this person's going to actually do something or if it's going to be, you know, maybe another year or 2 years that before they actually make a move. And that has nothing to do with finances, whether or not they're approved or whether or not they can figure out how to, you know, use quote unquote other people's money or private lending or any type of financial instrument that's presented. It's you've got to take action. So I think that's where a lot of it comes down to. I mean, there's probably a lot of people learning a lot, but not doing anything with that knowledge.
Man, that is amazing because I talk about this on the podcast a lot. And so you guys can hear from someone who doesn't live in Canada. He also didn't grow up where he had a bunch of money, right? He came from a background similar to most of the people that I bring on this podcast who became wealthy. What did he mention? He got out there, he put the work in, and that's how you do it. You know what I mean? It's just not, you know, something that happens overnight. It's a grind. But one thing you pointed out is what I noticed over time too, is that you can meet someone, and because you've been doing this for a while, you can tell if that person's actually really going to do something, whether I call them Amadoos. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Yeah. There's so many Amadoos out here.
I love that.
And they, you know, they complain about what other people are doing. It's like, well, I'm going to do this. Well, just go do it. But you can, once you come across someone being in the industry for so long, you're like, okay, this dude's not going to do anything. Or this person or this woman. Well, you just know. It just becomes on the territory.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it goes, a lot of it is what people see on maybe social media, or, you know, they listen to podcasts like this, hear guys like you and I talk, and, you know, okay, I've got 30 doors. That doesn't maybe sound like a whole lot down south, because I know that price points and whatnot are quite different, which I'm sure we'll get into eventually on the show here. But talking to people in Canada up here, getting your first property when the average price point in like the GTA, which is the Greater Toronto Area, which is where 1 in 4 Canadians actually live, you know, you're not getting anything here for less than like $700,000 if it's a duplex. So like that presents a massive barrier to entry for people, but they don't, you know, people hear me say, okay, I've got 30 doors, but they don't realize that, you know, it was only a few years ago that I was literally sleeping on an air mattress in my rental properties, trying to do as much of the work as I could myself, because that's what I had to do to get to where I am. Right. So, you know, they just hear the big numbers, or they just hear the success stories, and they don't realize, and maybe it's because we don't advertise it enough, but all like the, you know, the grit it takes to be a successful investor, again, right, that doesn't come from money, or that doesn't have handouts, or that maybe you're just like, I'm just a normal guy, right? I'm just a normal guy that was able to push through it. I'm not any smarter than anybody else, but I was just able to utilize the right people. And yeah, I mean, I think that's it. You just really have to like put the work in.
Ever thought to yourself, I wish I could get into real estate investing? You can change this as quickly or as slowly as you want to now. Imagine yourself networking and making new connections in real estate globally, or buying an investment property in a market or country that fits your needs. People do. They know what I'm talking about. And now you can too with InvestFAR. Connect and join the network. Remote investing made safe and easy.
It's funny, man. Like J Balvin, yeah. Obviously, I don't know if people know him, but he's a reggaeton artist from Colombia.
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like he says, people see the glory, but they don't know the story.
That's it. So like, that's it. Yeah,
that sums it up, man. So for people listening, there's people from all over that listen to this podcast. I'm promoting, obviously, investing remote because some people can't use their funds in their particular country to buy somewhere else. What do you think the advantages would be to someone investing in Canada? Because the exchange rate with the US and Canada is not that large, but there's still an exchange rate. So what do you think the advantages of someone investing in Canada, someone from Europe or whatnot?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's interesting. You know, first of all, let me preface that by saying it's funny. I don't get that question a lot. Why? Well, I obviously, being up in Canada and dealing with a lot of Canadian investors, the question is, how do I invest in Florida usually? Because we see a ton of Canadians, a flight of capital down to places like that. Obviously, weather being a pretty major issue. There's a term up here, snowbirds. I don't know if that's a term. So we were just on a call with some guys from Austria, actually, who are looking to put together a bunch of European money and deploy it into Canadian real estate. And we're actually putting together a package for them right now. I'll just tell you what they said, because I found it fascinating. You know, we're in a bit of more of a late stage housing cycle, a late stage economy, where we still, like, I think it's about 68% of Canadians own homes. And I believe it's even less people in America. Now, if you go and look at very developed, much older countries, let's say like Switzerland and Germany, for instance, it's down in like the 30s and 40% of people that actually own homes. Homes are owned by either large investors that own, you know, small cap, but large investors that own two, five, 10, 20 properties, or you've got companies like, you know, the BlackRock, Blackstones of the world that, you know, or the iBuyers that we've seen in the States come up that own, you know, go and buy full subdivisions and neighborhoods. I think what makes Canada so attractive to Canadians internally, but also to people in the States or Europe or wherever it may be, is the fact that we are in a blatant housing crisis. We don't have nearly enough homes. It makes the news all the time here. I mean, there's articles that are coming out today that we need to increase our workforce. We need to have 50% more of the homes that were already projected. So the projection needs to be increased by 50% just within the next year. Like, we need something like several million more homes within the next several years to even keep up with population. And that's the other good thing, is that our population is actually growing. And that's not just on birth rate, because unfortunately birth rate is down in the States, in Canada, and a lot of other developed countries. And I think that, you know, that's a whole other discussion that might have a lot to do with inflation and just, you know, economic strains that's put on young people because it's so expensive to have children these days. But we are accepting a ton of immigrants, hundreds of thousands a year, actually upwards of almost 500,000 over the next couple of years.
Whoa.
Those immigrants aren't going to have places to go, which is why we've seen, you know, almost a scramble in government legislation, introducing several new bills in major geographic areas across the country that are now allowing for increased density. So we've got a housing crisis. We've got increased population through good immigration, where we're accepting hundreds of thousands of people a year. And then we are now trying to figure out where those people are going to live. So we're trying to build as fast as possible, but that's caused prices to go up. That's caused rent to go up, but that's also caused legislation to now change in favor of a lot of infill development. So, you know, turning a single family home with a deep lot, you're now able to go and triplex that, and you're able to go put a DADU, so a detached accessory dwelling unit, out the back. So you can essentially fourplex just about anything in a lot of major areas across the country now.
That is insane.
Yeah.
North America basically is having this issue because the US has a 4 million home deficit. Obviously, you just mentioned Canada having the same deficit. With all these immigrants coming in, what part of Canada do you think would be the best area to invest in? My friend lived in Montreal for a while. He said that's a good, you know, area. You obviously are in Toronto. That's booming. You know, but Toronto may be oversaturated because it's Toronto, right? So yeah. Everybody knows about that. So what areas of Canada do you think would be best for someone coming in? And my next question to add to that, does Canada provide lending like in the States? For a foreign national, you can get funds. You might have to put down 50% or whatnot, but you can still get funding. What's Canada like in regards to that?
Yeah, so from the financial side of things, there's a lot of different financial vehicles and instruments that can be used for specific, you know, more subjective type deals, foreign nationals, et cetera. We actually just placed a foreign home ban. So that's kind of going to put a stop to that. And that was a little bit of a Band-Aid solution. You know, don't quote me on it, but there's loopholes around that as well. Several dozen loopholes. I think that was to try to stop the foreign investment capital. There's this myth here that investors have ruined the market. That's because the data is skewed and they consider anyone, like the government considers anyone that owns two properties an investor. So for instance, if I'm 22 years old and I go to buy my first condo and I need mom and dad to help me buy it, so they co-sign, meaning they now have a 1% share, their names on title. Now mom and dad become investors. Same thing as if mom and dad are, you know, just your normal parents, they own a cottage or a summer home or whatever that may be, that's considered investing as well. So I think it's skewed the data. As far as where I think, you know, newcomers will land, I think, you know, I'm happy to talk about that. I think that's a different discussion than investing, unless we look at it, where are they going to come and land? Because they're likely going to rent for the first few years. You know, it's like a massive percentage point that come in. I think rent, I think it's the average, like 60 or 70% come in and end up renting for the first 4 years. So, and if you think about it, it makes complete sense, right? You land in a foreign country, you're probably going to, you know, you might land in Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, one of the big cities from there, you're probably going to be like, okay, well, this is either too expensive. I can't find work here. I want to grow my family. I need more space, whatever that may be. And I think that's where we start to see a lot of urban sprawl. So you might land in one of the larger cities. Then it might become pretty obvious over the course of spending your first couple months or a year or two there that it might not be the best longevity play. That's where I start. I mean, for instance, I'm in Toronto. I rent in Toronto. I don't own the place I'm talking to you from right now. And I don't plan on owning anything in Toronto just yet, strictly because the cap rates are garbage for the most part. And I'm trying to be a bit more of a cash flow investor. So even all the properties I own are a minimum 4-hour drive away from the city. I think that's probably what we'll start to see happen with a lot of the newcomers that land is they'll probably spend a bit of time here and then, you know, start what we call, you know, drive, kind of like driving for dollars, but it's drive to quantify. So basically you drive until the property starts to make sense from a finances standpoint. You know, there's also a lot of like secondary and tertiary cities that would be considered quite small in America, but that are, you know, fairly prominent here. And they're doing a lot of, they're advertising a lot of pull factors, whether it's cheaper housing, cheaper taxes, more jobs, other incentives for newcomers.
Dang, I like that, man. Just the net migration. I think, you know, yeah. I talk about it all the time. Most people, when you go somewhere, and I did the same thing in Colombia, you kind of want to go and check a place out. So you rent for like 6 months to a year, and then you can be like, I like this area. I'm going to get a place here. So I think exactly. That's ideally when you're trying to invest in another country, you get the city where people are going to first, and you get a place there that you can rent out because you know those people might end up staying there, but they have to at least stay in your area for at least a year before they decide to go somewhere else.
For sure.
So is there a lot of remote work happening in Canada? Like it is.
Yeah, it's definitely a hot topic right now, especially, you know, again, my background being in commercial real estate, as well as my partner was a commercial broker, still does a lot of commercial work. And obviously that's a hot topic right now with office vacancy, right? We've seen some pretty staggering office vacancy and a bit of a kangaroo market in the AAA office space and office categories like, you know, A, B, C, across the country. There was obviously a massive remote work trend that, you know, randomly happened over the last 2 years. We don't need to go into that as to why that happened, but probably better to avoid that conversation. But it's a trend that is still very prominent, but it's something that I've started to see die off a little bit as we start to see a lot of like the major employers be like, okay, well, we just signed 1 million square feet of AAA office space in downtown Toronto, or we just built, you know, we're the anchor tenant at a new building in Vancouver with building top signage. We signed a 10-year lease. Y'all are coming back to the office. Like, yep, you know, exactly. whether it's 2 days a week or 3 days a week or, you know, X number of days a month. You know, for me as a mortgage agent, real estate investor, obviously I'm a little more all over the place. I don't have a traditional office that I go into. However, I have had those roles before when I was in a commercial real estate brokerage. I loved going into the office. And I would urge most people that, you know, if you can go into the office, that's where a lot of great stuff happens. That's where creativity happens. I'm a big people's person and I think collaboration happens in real life. And you know, obviously it's probably shouldn't say that since we're on a podcast a couple thousand miles away from each other. But you know, if we were to go into business together, Andre, I'd like to meet you in person first and you know, have a roundtable session on, you know, get to know you in person. I feel like that's where a lot of good collaboration happens. So from like a human standpoint, you know, I'd urge people to at least go back to the office a little bit. And from a business standpoint, I can comfortably tell you that if I was a large business owner or a person in charge of, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of people, and we'd rented or purchased office space on a long-term lease, I would fully want them and expect them to come back at least in some capacity because I've made such a large investment and I can't see these office spaces sitting vacant for too long, I hope anyways. And then there's also the argument, okay, well, why, you know, we have a housing crisis. Let's turn some of these office spaces into residential stuff. I don't know if that's been much of a conversation in America. It's definitely been something that's come up here a few times, but that those kind of office conversions. Now there are grants and incentives to do that, but that is a massive, massive undertaking. And usually from a zoning perspective or from a retrofit perspective, doesn't make a ton of sense.
No, that makes sense. I always say that right now it might be the best time to buy commercial real estate, but you know that people aren't going to be able to work from home forever.
Exactly.
Too many corporations own too much commercial real estate to let people stay at home.
Exactly. When, you know, be watching Netflix in between your breaks and, you know, have, exactly. Have a suit and tie on with pajama pants or, you know, no people, pants on or something like that. Right. That can only go on for so long. And I think people get more work done when they're together. I also don't agree very clearly. I don't agree with going into the office from 9 to 5, you know, Monday to Friday. True. I also absolutely despise that and think it's completely backwards. I think the office should be a place for collaboration, for people to come together and work together in a capacity that can only be done in real life. And then everyone goes back and everyone has their perspective tasks that you probably need to do your heads down work. And you don't need to be in the office to do that. You know, I think I read some stat that like if you're in the office for 8 hours, you're probably only getting about 3 hours, 3.5 hours of solid work done. The rest of it's just wasted time. So I think the blended model looks really good to me.
I like it. You know, all my employees, you know, whether they're here or internationally, they do hybrid work. So we're trying to open up offices for people to go in. We're coming up on time. So I got two more questions.
Sure.
Because you do have a large, you know, podcast or a lot of investors in your network. What states in the U.S., just so the listeners know that they should probably be investing there, what states are Canadians targeting in the U.S.? You said Florida.
I'm going to go back and say Florida again first, just because I don't know what the pull factor is with Canadians. I really think it comes down to the weather. I mean, again, it's cold up here a lot of the year, right? Yeah. And the, you know, Florida, being Florida, I'm not going to get into what makes it Florida. You know, most of your listeners probably know better than I do, but I think a combination of real estate, politics, taxes, and a number of other things has allowed Canadians to really focus their capital and their attention down there. And now there's a ton of people up here that have built out full-blown systems and have built out, you know, these cross-border power teams that make it quite easy for Canadians to invest in Florida. North Carolina would be another good one. And I also see, I mean, I don't know if people are investing a lot in California or investing a lot in Texas, but we have seen, a flight of people down to both of those locations. And then directly south of us in Michigan with Detroit and whatnot, right? There's a city on the border called Windsor, shares the border with Detroit. And it's funny, the real estate prices and everything changes drastically within, you know, a kilometer or less. So there, you know, we start to see it. It's just I think any border town, you'll see a lot of people kind of trickle in to America through there.
I love Windsor, man.
Come on up. I'll trade you spots.
In college, you know, that was an area that you can go to and be 18 and get into a club.
Yes. Listen, Montreal is a special place. Montreal is beautiful. It's obvious. It's got some of the oldest neighborhoods in Canada. Quebec is beautiful. I got to say my only beef, this might anger some, if you have any French Canadian listeners, is that, you know, there's a bit of a language barrier in some parts of that province because they, unlike the rest of Canada, that the language is English, they speak a dialect of French primarily in a lot of places there. In Montreal and Quebec, you'll find a lot of English speakers, but the more rural you get, it becomes a little more French.
Yep, exactly. My last question, man, I like to ask this all the time because, you know, like I said, most of the people that come on the podcast have a similar background. None of us came from money. I've talked to people all across the world and we all had the same thing. So it had to be your mindset. What books help you shape your mindset? I know you mentioned Bigger Pockets, but you had to read something. And what tools are you using to get your mind to the place of where it is right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the mindset thing is really goes back to surrounding yourself with good people. I really truly believe that. I mean, my life has always been about finding the best people around me. You know, whatever business I had, it was finding mentors and people that are doing better than me at what I hope to be doing. So that would be the main thing. I mean, obviously I do a bunch of other stuff, try to get networking, obviously put out a ton of content, all that good stuff, but find good people around you and surround yourself with them and be valuable to them. I'm going to be super cliche and tell you that Rich Dad Poor Dad changed the game for me, like, you know, 20 years ago when I read it in high school. Bigger Pockets changed the game as well. You know, I hate to admit it. I haven't had the time to like pick up a book and read it in the last probably full year. And I don't read a ton of real estate books. I find a ton of real estate podcasts and YouTube content very valuable though.
Man, Nick, Thank you, man. Thank you for your time and dropping those jewels. And that's kind of what we do too. I tell people the same thing, podcast, and everyone knows Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But Nick, thank you for coming on. I got to bring you back. Hopefully I can come on your podcast one day as well.
Would love that, man. Absolute pleasure, Andre. Hopefully we'll see you in person at some point too, man.
For sure, man. We will definitely connect.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Aren't you ready to start a business or grow your real estate investing portfolio? If you answered yes, allow Andre and the expert advisors at the Residual Roads Business Institute to fast track and put you on a path to full-time investing. The greatest transfer of wealth in our lifetime is occurring over the next few years, and you can take advantage if you know what to look for. In order to be successful at real estate investing, you need to learn how to leverage your current resources to generate quick money, big money, and retirement money. Let Residual Roads advisors craft a plan to get you through these phases using little or no money in 6 months or less. Don't wait for a job. Create one for yourself and others. Go to residualroads.com for mentorship, and for our free course, go to residualroads.thinkific.com.